Welcome to COVID-19 Business Watch, and we're looking at the potential pandemic of debt. Now, rising profits do not necessarily reflect good strategic decision-making or the creation of long-term economic value inside businesses, and that only occurs when companies invest in positive net present value, NPV strategies, where the return on capital exceeds the cost on capital. Now, every student of finance is taught this rule. It's almost economics 101. And this business and investment theory has been ably demonstrated through this crisis that has exposed a pandemic of debt, none more so than in the listed property sector. And when faced with low growth here at home, the executives at a number of South African REITs looked towards Central and Eastern Europe and the Antipodes and elsewhere for growth and raised foreign currency debt to fuel their expansion. They now lack sufficient equity to absorb the losses from COVID-19 related shutdowns, and debt to market value ratios have risen dramatically over the last 6 months. It's why the property index is one of the laggards at the moment. What are the lessons in all of this, though? To talk about the good, the bad and the ugly of gearing, I've invited Professor Brian Cantor, an economist and former chief investment strategist of Investec Wealth and Investment, and a professor emeritus at the University of Cape Town, where he was the dean of the Faculty of Commerce and also head of the School of Economics, and David Holland, co-founder of Fractal Value Advisors and an adjunct professor at the University of Cape Town Graduate School of Business. He served as a senior advisor to Credit Suisse Europe since 2011. Previously, he was MD at Credit Suisse based in London, and David was in charge of Holt Valuation and Analytics. It's the research and development arm of Credit Suisse Holt and ran their Global Custom Solutions Group. He was also responsible for improvements to the cash flow return on investment framework and other Credit Suisse valuation models, and has most recently written a must-read book, Beyond Earnings. So, David, you can kick us off. Welcome. Great to have you on the show. Financial measures such as earnings per share, EPS, are really central to so many methods of valuing a business. Yet earnings can only tell us so much, particularly when it comes to how a company is allocating its capital. Why is it so critical to go beyond earnings in today's environment in particular?
Well, the rules of finance haven't really changed in the last 60 or 70 years. And the golden rule of finance is the net present value NPV rule. So you should if you have a number of alternatives or decisions to make, you should take the decision with the highest NPV. Now, when executives are remunerated on EPS and things of that nature, they might make some acquisitions, for example, using quite a bit of leverage, so they could grow earnings and get paid, but they might pay too much for these acquisitions, and there's plenty of examples of that, particularly in South Africa. So they might pay too much and destroy value. So they get paid for growing earnings while they're destroying value. So NPV is always first.
And that, as you said, we've seen so many examples of, Brian, in the South African context. We've seen management teams, executives justify going offshore and gearing up their balance sheets to acquire assets in Europe. In Europe, we've seen it with Gourmet Burger, Brait's New Look, Gourmet Burger Kitchen. We saw it down under with David Jones. But also the rationale here used by executive management is to diversify away from South Africa. What do you make of that rationale?
Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, the argument essentially is flawed because, in fact, investors, pension funds and the like, people who manage money have no lack of opportunity to, in principle, to find good investments abroad and diversify accordingly. They don't need South African businesses, essentially, to do that job for them. However, institutional investors in South Africa are subject to exchange control, and they're not allowed to invest more than 30% of their equity portfolios, or their portfolios generally, in offshore equity. But they would, for obvious reasons, like more exposure offshore to great businesses, yes, without South African risk, which is considerable. You do need a higher return from South African investments than you would from investments in the US or Europe. Now, that encouraged, I think, that interest in diversifying offshore encouraged South African companies including foreign companies listing on the JSE to raise capital to invest abroad. And that leads, I think, to mistakes. There's no reason to think that South African managers, very good in South Africa, they know the local economy, they know how to do business successfully in South Africa. Do they have the same competence abroad? Do they have the same skills to compete with the best retailers in London or in New York and or in Sydney or in Melbourne? And the answer to that in principle is no, they do not, and they should stick to the last. But unfortunately, they haven't done so with some unfortunate effects, especially, and this is the case of the property company. When they invested offshore using predominantly, almost exclusively, a capital, debt capital raised offshore. And that has got them into, and their shareholders, their owners, into big, big trouble.
And as we've seen, it's exposed them to currency risk as well. David, if one looks at good allocators of capital in the South African market, Sanlam is a very good example. It's got a prized reputation as being an excellent capital allocator. What are the right questions to be asking around the allocation of capital when we see this ability by management teams to look and chase for earnings growth by overpaying or overgearing their balance sheets? What is the correct framework that you as an investor use to analyze that capital allocation effectively?
Well, I'm a big fan of using decision trees. So, again, the objective is to maximize the net present value. So if you put all of your decisions and the uncertainties with those decisions in a decision tree, you'll have a nice visual method of seeing what the alternatives are, and you'll have the numbers in front of you to help guide the decision. And the decision should have nothing to do with earnings, zero, nothing, nada. It should only be based on which decision gives you the highest expected or probabilistic net present value. And the interesting thing that ties into, which many don't understand or realize, is that every time you take on a positive NPV project or make a positive NPV decision, if the market realizes it, that will immediately impact your share price, whether up or down. That's why if you announce an acquisition that the market thinks you're paying too much for, your share price will immediately react to that. Now to complete the circle, in terms of remuneration and really measurement for corporate, looking at the EVA, the economic value added, or the economic profit. So if they're beating their cost of capital, they'll be creating that. And the aim is to increase that economic profit. Now the neat thing is that the present value of all those economic profit streams equals exactly the NPV of decisions you've made today and decisions you haven't even thought about yet. So project economics and corporate finance meet right there. Every single decision you make should be made with the highest possible NPV you can extract from that decision.
And very much out of the Joel Stern economic playbook, that. And Brian, I know you're a big fan of Joel Stern and economic value add as well. And it's important to understand where earnings growth is coming from. Is it higher leverage? Is it increasing investment? Is it operating efficiency? And Brian, really here, the holy grail using this net present value model should be having a look at whether or not management teams are extracting efficiency. And as you just said, we don't seem to be very good at that in South Africa abroad.
So the key here is operational capabilities. So you should, as an investor, you should hope to identify the skill, the operational capability of the company, and then you should be very aware of the balance sheet. It's not simply about operations; it's also about how these operations are funded, and one should know where the operational profits are coming from. And you need to look at both the income statements and the balance sheet. And if you think about South African property companies that way, they in the good times sacrificed a lot of their balance sheet strength to drive home growth in distributions per share. In this case, in the property REITs, it's cash distributed. So they focused on growing cash distributed, and unfortunately, the investors didn't pay nearly enough attention to where the extra cash was coming from. In their instances, not only borrowing abroad, but also raising cash locally when it was so easy to do so, to effectively support distributions. In other words, paying out cash from fresh capital raised, and that clearly is not a value added. Piling up more debt makes companies more risky, and the more risky you are, the more vulnerable you are to the bad times. So debt sometimes looks cheaper than equity, but isn't necessarily cheaper than it is more risky, and that riskiness shows up in the values attached to future operational profits properly measured, and affects the value of a company. And then when things turn nasty, as they've done recently, that encumbrance of debt becomes particularly dangerous and conspicuous, and may threaten the survival of a business.
Yeah,
these principles of NPV should apply to any use of capital, including capital raised for the purpose of securing the survival of a business. And I see lots of poor thought, inadequate thinking. You talk about finance 101, not practicing finance 101 when it comes to the issue of South African companies going to their shareholders, as they are doing now, and asking for more capital.
David Holland, it's important to remember, though, I mean, we've been talking about what can go wrong with debt, particularly if you've over-levered your balance sheet. But one can also be accused of having a lazy balance sheet. So what is the optimal leverage or gearing that companies really should be exposing their shareholders to?
Yeah, well, you always want to be investment grade. You never, ever want to be downgraded into sub-investment grade. So you never want that junk status, because that immediately puts you into some sort of financial distress. In terms of a number, basically you want to leverage, so a debt to total capital of around 30% or less. Now that's going to be very industry specific, so the more volatile cash flows are for a particular company or industry, like mining is highly volatile, you'll want a lower leverage, so it's going to change from industry to industry. But you always want to remain well within investment grade. Mm. And I'll follow up on Brian's point. You generate far more value by running better operations or running a better business than you do by financial engineering. And I'll give you a number, which will probably surprise you, but the optimal amount of value you can typically get for a company with debt is only about 5 to 10% of the unlevered value. So all this financial engineering is only generating an additional 5 to 10% of value. And the higher your returns, it's even less than that. So it's going to be less than 5%. So it's not worthwhile for a company like Clix or something like that to play financial engineer. It's far better for them to pay more attention to their customers, the products they're selling, the expansion of their stores, things of that nature. So I distrust financial engineering in the academic studies in my own models. Mm-hmm. I mean, It's just not worth it.
And why we've seen, to use the Clicks example, foreign investors willing to pay up for Clicks. The old David Neil Rackham High, sell 'em low model now taken over by Vikesh Ramsunder. Certainly not about financial engineering. Brian, to your point, the property industry has become all about financial engineering. And that's probably also why we're seeing this volatility in it as well. For an asset class that should sit somewhere between equity and bonds, there is just far too much volatility in the property market at the moment.
Well, property traditionally rental income was very predictable. The South African property companies, many of them, got into trouble, if you like, or were seen very differently by investors long before the COVID crisis that really engulfed them, and so threatened their rental incomes. The industry lost its reputation, I would say, for sound management before COVID, and COVID has come as an additional blow to them, as it has to retailers, because their rental income has collapsed. So their cash flow has been seriously affected, and REITs, which is a particular category of company allowed to listed property companies, listed on the JSE, only listed property companies on the JSE, have to pass through any income they make. 75% has to be passed through to their owners, who may or may not pay tax. If they're private owners, they'll be paying tax. If they're pension funds or mutual funds, they'll not be. So they've now appealed to the authorities to allow them to hold on to more than 25% of the cash that they generate, or of the income that they generate, cash that they
to repair their balance sheets.
To repair their balance sheets and to retain what is valuable to them, and that's that REIT status. And incidentally, REITs don't get any debt writer. You don't expense interest because you don't pay company tax. Nevertheless, they have raised debt. Now, my argument with them is, if you want to improve your balance sheets and your valuations, you shouldn't just be asking for relief. You should be raising fresh capital, and you should be issuing more shares, not more debt, more shares, and raise capital, issue more shares, and strengthen your balance sheets. And if this is seen as risk reducing, which presumably it will be, you would see approval in the marketplace. So with any capital raise, particularly in the case of companies facing a danger of going out of business for want of being able to meet their debts, raising equity capital, even though it means issuing more shares, and reducing the share of the established shareholders in any income or anywhere, can be enormously value-adding. And I think it's so important that in South Africa at the moment that we should approach capital raising in the right way. And to say to investors should appreciate and shareholders should appreciate that capital raising can be economically value-adding, particularly in circumstances like this. Because if you fail to support a company in distress, especially when it's for no reasons of their own mismanagement, maybe they carried excess of debt, and that is something you can hold against them, but really to hold them responsible, or to be been able to predict COVID-19 would have been to ask too much. Now,
what about dilution, though, Brian?
Capital, and your share price will pay back, even though the number of shares has been has increased. Capital raising, even in emergency, or especially in emergencies, can be value adding.
And David, I want to bring you in here because the issue I think often raised is one of dilution. We had it raised yesterday at the Omnia results. I think Pitfall Unit regarding capital management was saying that Omnia is going to have to get back to earnings of around 10 rand per share from the current 1 rand a share to effectively cover the cost of that capital raise. Effectively, what we're saying here now of issue to and relevance to shareholders is whether or not the extra capital intended to be raised can pay for itself and not really be too fixated on dilution.
It's not a matter of dilution. It's really, as Brian said, you want to take the decision that's going to give you the most NPV or in this case, destroy the least amount of NPV. Okay? So if you think about the decision tree and you're in a dire situation, well, the first thing you want to do is cut dividends to conserve cash. If you've already cut that and you're still in trouble, you definitely don't want to issue debt because you, by issuing debt, you're just increasing the probability of default. So in other words, you're actually destroying more value. You're putting yourself in a more precarious situation. So you should absolutely issue shares, even if it means dilution, even if you have to do it at a deep discount, to stay alive. Survival comes first. So that's going to destroy the least amount of value. And by the way, forget about coronavirus too. You know, we've been looking at a lot of financial distress in South Africa well before coronavirus. I mean, who do we have? We've got Tongaat Hewlett, we've got Steinhoff, we've got Ascendis, we've got Aspen Pharma, Nampak, Sasol, PPC, CIG, Anglo-American 4 or 5 years ago, great, famous brands. You know, there's a long list of companies that have used excessive amounts of debt, and their share prices have been punished. So you definitely want to be more conservative and think in terms of running a more valuable business and more valuable operations.
Yes.
Brian, just to add on to that, and you know, we've been talking in the past about how to appropriately incentivize management here, and it was to David's earlier point when he said management can effectively game the system just if you're focusing on earnings by over-leveraging and by overpaying. How does EVA get around managers gaming the system?
Yes, well, you know, the dilution story. The way you avoid dilution is raising debt. So. And that works very well in the good times. So you don't have to give up a share of your profits. You raise debt, and the returns may exceed the financial cost, and return on equity improves. And managers, when incentivized that way, are very much encouraged to take on leverage. Now, the fundamental approach is first consider the investment decision, irrespective of how it's funded. Does the investment pay for itself? Does it give you a return in excess of its opportunity cost? And having agreed or with confidence that the investment decision makes sense, then you think about how best to fund that investment. And in the case of most successful companies, Their own cash flow is used to fund capital expenditure. So successful companies generate their own capital, but that capital needs to be subject to the same discipline that any capital raise would be. If you can't beat the required return, pay back that capital. If you can beat that required return, The logical answer, and that was always Joel Stern's answer, well, raise more capital to do so. Mm. Now, that's quite rare. It's quite rare where you get a growth company funding its growth with equity capital raise. If anything, they're more inclined to fund growth with debt capital raise. But that in itself, as David has pointed out, such a crucial point. If you raise debt and you threaten your financial status, your credit rating, you're doing your shareholders an enormous amount of trouble. You're causing them serious trouble, and it will show up in the share price. So That's the new religion. Unfortunately, it's still seeking adherence. The religion is you incentivize managers on return on capital, all capital, be it debt or equity capital, properly measured. And by properly measured, cash in and cash out. So the cash that goes in and the cash that comes out of the business operations, that's the way you measure return. Not a return on equity capital.
Right, so, right.
It'd be very, very unhelpful in certain circumstances. You write off your past investments, you reduce your equity capital, and then you improve the return on equity capital. That's not the way to incentivize.
Just lastly, what do the REITs do now? Because the current strategy is just sort of hoping and praying for Rand strength, effectively. What would you like to see the listed property industry managers do to regain a lot of that lost credibility?
They should be raising equity capital. They should be paying down debt. They should be de-risking their balance sheets. They should own up to their over leverage, even though the interest expense of their offshore debt on paper looks quite low. It is terribly vulnerable to exchange rate weakness. So you see these stocks bouncing around with the Rand, improving when the Rand strengthens, deteriorate when the Rand weakens. You don't want property companies to be a play on the exchange rate. And you want them to be a play on South African property, not on global property, in which there are many other ways to invest. So get your balance sheets in order. Okay. Own up to the errors of your ways and reestablish the credibility, literally and figuratively, of the industry, was a part for a while.
On that note, Brian, we're going to have to end it off. Fascinating conversation, chaps. Thank you very much. That was Professor Brian Cantor and David Holland, also an adjunct professor at the UCT Graduate School of Business, talking about how we should be, as investors and managers of companies, approaching our balance sheets during times, not only of crisis, in fact, at all times. Very interesting to have an in-depth discussion on what REITs should be doing to regain their credibility that has been so thoroughly shredded over the last 24 months.